This is TWiT.
You wrote an essay about how you wrote the book, why you wrote the book, and you talk about how you don't think that the founders of these companies wake up every morning and think, like, how can I steal people's data? But why do they do it? Is it the bottom line? Is it for fame, or like to have, you know, is it why any of us do anything, because we want to be remembered? Why do you think they're growing at this rate and expanding and sort of violating our privacy in the process?
Yeah, I mean, I think the media sometimes paints these CEOs or people in tech generally as evil people, lack all empathy. And while I think the CEOs, both their level of quality, let's say, and their level of empathy varies from CEO to CEO, I don't think that they're evil people. And I think that they, for the most part, do have good intentions, and that a lot of what they said, particularly in the early days in terms of their mission statements and their visions, holds true. I don't think Twitter was built as a free speech platform because Jack Dorsey imagined it would become the cesspool that it has. I think it was very much out of this optimistic belief that more information is a good thing. But at the same time, I think what happens is you start building something and you get traction, and through a combination of a huge amount of availability of capital combined with a little bit of FOMO and watching what your competitors are doing, and wanting to be able to, not wanting someone to claim a space before you, and no blockers on your expansion, you just keep growing. And so if you're Google, for example, you start doing search, and search is going well, and then all of a sudden you realize that there's, I don't know, IE. Remember when we all used IE? That there's IE that can block you getting to search. So we better go build a browser. Now you've got Chrome. Chrome then overtakes everything. So you've got Chrome now, amazing. But then you figure out that, wait a second, like they can stop us at the hardware level. They can do IE as the default search and, you know, a default browser. So now you go and build your hardware. And then you've built your hardware and you say, but wait, what if people can't get onto the internet? Let's go do the fiber. Or if you're Facebook, you go the same way. You can go from newsfeed to get yourself to WhatsApp, to Instagram, to internet planes. Or Amazon, you go from diapers and books to then all of a sudden you own a grocery store. And it's like every single step, it's not necessarily that someone starts off saying, I'm going to like be the diaper store online, and eventually one day I'm going to own all of groceries. I don't think that anyone is actually as clever as sometimes we ascribe to all these men. But it's more that there's nothing ever stopping you or telling you you can't do these things, and you have so much money and a little bit of ego that you just keep going. And I think that's actually more concerning than the popular narrative around just wanting to steal everyone's data. Because if it was just to get everyone's data, we would know what the end game was, and you would have an idea of how to regulate that. I think it's actually harder when it's just around size. Mm-hmm.
And so I think people used to say that the biggest problem with Silicon Valley was that everyone walks around, like all these tech leaders walk around with everyone saying that, you know, they're fantastic and they're great and there's nothing wrong with them and everything they're doing is great. But that's not happening anymore. I mean, there's a lot of complaints. Like, I don't know what happens, you know, to Mark Zuckerberg when he walks the halls, if like there are still a group of people following him, telling him how great he is. But I mean, generally, people are suspicious. They're unhappy. Maybe they're leaving some platforms. Maybe they hate Facebook, but they're still using Facebook. I mean, do you think that has the ability to change? Just people's view of what's going on in tech has the ability to make these people wake up and say, you know, maybe we need to change the way we're doing things.
Yeah, I think there's a combination of it. At the CEO level, I think any company, any industry, once you have a lot of power, it is very, very difficult to build an infrastructure around you that will challenge you. Everything I think in human nature points towards us building infrastructures that reinforce what we think, whether it's working with people that we think are kind to us and nice, but essentially agree with us, and people who agree with our whims. So I think it's very, very hard for any of these CEOs to find their points of view challenged a lot. I think there's an infrastructure of yes that builds up anywhere. But I do think that a lot of the public, I think where the public scrutiny is the most useful, and this kind of tech lash, as you said, is because I think the employees are, there's always been a strong activist bent, particularly in companies like Google, and I would say probably at Twitter as well, Facebook a little bit less so, but still. And I think that the public scrutiny draws attention to issues that the employees might otherwise only be, might not be aware of, or they might be fed a very different line on. And so the employees are now taking a lot more action in terms of trying to hold their companies accountable. I think that works a little bit more in companies that have, again, a really strong activist culture. And it can go in the other direction too, where it can be, it can probably go too far and the company can cave too much to employees. But I think when you look a lot at what's happened with Google, that's what you're seeing play out, where the employees don't feel, that what Google's doing in some instances is right. And I think Facebook is perhaps not as far there. I think it's a little bit younger of a company, and I think it also is a little bit more insular in terms of it's still. I think it's still in a phase of feeling. I think it's only starting to turn that corner and not just feeling like it's a victim and blaming the media for the bad press. In the same way that I think Uber did for a long time as well, too. So I think everyone's in sort of different stages in terms of how they are interacting with the whole techlash narrative. But yeah, I'm hopeful that there will be some change that will come through a combination of employee pressure, regulation, like smart regulation, which I think is key, and continued public scrutiny.
So what about the argument that, you know, their bottom line is dependent on these things that they've done? You know, they can't, the ship is too big to turn around now. Do you think there's any truth to that?
I mean, yes and no. Like, if it was a technology issue, I mean, think about Facebook. So I can think of just two examples off the top of my head. I remember quarter after quarter, we'd be sitting there preparing earnings call stuff for Google. And the analysts would get on there and there would always be all this moaning about whether Google could monetize on mobile. And the press reports that would come out after every earnings call, even if earnings were good, even if we beat expectations, there would always have to be these like two or three paragraphs about mobile monetization. As if like that was something you were going to fix overnight and or that something that was impossible. But if, like the world went mobile, it was fine. You look at Facebook, which made that pivot to mobile even faster. Right, like they had a company mandate to go all in on mobile, and they did it. So I think it's hard to square this idea of asking really big questions and coming from things with like at first principles and a belief that you can really change things with somehow thinking, oh, but it's too big, we can't do anything. Do I think it's could be slow? Yes. Do I think? I think the biggest fear really for these companies is one that users, depending on what the product is, like something for, particularly for social, that users go elsewhere. And maybe they don't even go elsewhere necessarily because of their privacy concerns, but rather just because no one stays hot forever. And Facebook, like no young person's using Facebook, right? So I think first is just your users. Like what does your user growth look like? And are users still using your product? And second, what about your employees? Because once you lose your tech talent in particular, I would say, your engineers, and you're no longer seen as a hot place to work, that's where I think you really start to suffer as well. And while you have a ton of money and you can pay people a lot, there are a lot of companies that can pay a lot of money. And so I think that's actually one of the biggest things these different companies worry about is if you, for example, are trying to get someone out of college to come down to Menlo Park or Palo Alto to work for your big tech company versus a startup in San Francisco that's a little bit smaller, can offer a bigger role and zero commute in a much more interesting city. And on top of that, you have, you know, reputation issues, which means that the kid's not getting pressure from their parents to go join this company that was so shiny 10 years ago. That's a problem. Like, that's definitely a long-term problem.